Kia ora, welcome to the fifth season of the Power Up podcast, powered by Te Puna Umanga Venture Taranaki and produced by Raw Collective. Over the past four seasons, we've spoken to a whole range of trailblazing business owners and entrepreneurs from all over Taranaki. We've painted a picture of all the awesome things happening across various sectors in the region, and this season, we're adding even more to it. Season 5 has even more founders and innovators lifting the lid and telling their stories, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's a glimpse into the reality of success stories, where people talk about their journeys, wins, challenges, and how living in Taranaki shapes their work and lifestyle. I'm David Downs, and this is the latest in the series all about exceptional Taranaki businesses and thriving Taranaki people. No mai, haere mai, we welcome you to hear our enterprising story like no other. James Donald has become one of New Zealand's most respected entrepreneurs. He's actually our first repeat guest on the Power Up podcast. We initially spoke to him as co-founder of Yonder in our first season. Today we revisit Yonder, except this time to talk about how he took it through the process of being acquired by a US company. James also talks about his new venture, the rapidly growing customer research platform, Ideally. He talks about what Ideally is and how it's so popular so early, and how he got the drive to start another business from scratch. James's insight is great listening from anyone interested in the startup sector. He has lived experience across the whole life cycle of a startup, from the very first days to negotiating an exit, and then starting again and doing it bigger and better. Well, kia ora and welcome back, James.
Kia ora, very special to be back.
Oh, you are. I think you're our first returner, which is fantastic. And what have you been up to lately, apart from getting a lot of sun?
Just selling stuff, growing stuff.
Nice.
Including two kids.
Very good. You're not selling the kids, are you? Growing the kids and selling other things, hopefully.
Well, I hope they return their investments at some point in the future.
Oh, how naive you are. Now, last time we talked, we were talking about your tourism business, and you were, to remind listeners, you are the co-founder of a tourism business. You navigated COVID at a pretty tricky time for tourism businesses. If you look back now at that period of your life and your business life, how have things gone? Have they gone the way you thought they would?
Yes and no. So COVID was really a trying time, but also it begged us to ask deep searching questions. And we made some good decisions off the back of that. And I think we found out after a couple of years after that and sort of how things recovered, because it's a software business, meaning we're trying to scale and sort of grow all around the world. And we just sort of, with more experience having done that, we just realized how hard it was firsthand. And through all that, I also learned like what a good business actually looks like.
Yeah.
What a good market, a good problem, how to be defendable, how to actually get into people's hands and how to make the economics all work, all those sort of things you learn in the lean business model canvas. And it was always my aspiration to grow this like rocket ship type business. That's sort of why I left sort of a comfy corporate job before that, a bit like this rocket ship before up behind me. And so eventually sort of design a pathway to get out of that business and still chase that goal that I'd had. So has it gone the way I expected? Well, the pathway never is, but the destination has sort of stayed quite consistent.
Well, that's good. So you had a bit of a vision of what, and we're talking about Yonder, we should have said that. You had a vision for what you wanted, where you wanted to end up with it. Might have gone in a different direction, but you ended up selling it in the end. When did you start to think about selling it?
Well, I mean, you always sort of think about that before you even start it. In some senses, it's partly the prize you're working towards. Because being a bootstrap business, we did entertain funding for a little while. It was interesting though. They were like, "Yeah, we think you can only be a $10 million business, not a $100 million business. So we're not going to give you money." And we were like, "Well, maybe we're a $10 million business. So let's just keep doing that." And you know what? After a couple of years, we also realized that that does have the potential of a $10 million business, and it's also going to take time to get there. So we just found or came across a partnership that made a lot of sense to sell the business and keep it actually on that pathway to being a even better than $10 million business.
Brilliant.
Sold it to an American company who got some other software products in the tourism space. And they were actually trying to get us out of their hair. We were stealing some of their customers in the US, which they didn't really like.
Problematic.
Yes. So they were like, let's just buy you and get you out of our hair. But also through that, grow the New Zealand, this side of the world business for them, as well as scale our better technology that we built.
Oh, sounds like a win-win. Now, you had a co-founder, and that can bring in a new dynamic, when you've got two founders. Did you both have the same vision for selling and what you wanted to do with the business?
Yeah, definitely. And so that made that part quite easy. And if anything, it's actually a real benefit to have two co-founders or more, rather than just being the sole person carrying everything, because it meant that I could focus on sort of helping make the sale work, and then Leticia helped just keep the wheels running on the business.
Right.
I'd also strategically, I had already started moving out of the day-to-day of the business because I wanted to find a new thing. And so I'd replaced myself already in the sort of day-to-day of the business. We'd hired someone. Because we were, a team of six or seven by the time that we sold. We were bigger around the COVID time. But replacing myself was a great thing because it actually makes the business a lot more sellable because the relationships are not tied up with me. We've built process.
Yes. Forces you to do some of those operational disciplines that later, when you're doing the handover, makes a lot of sense. But talk us through, because many people listening to this will not have been through the process of selling a business. I mean, do you just sort of one day hang a sign on your website going for sale? You know, how does it happen?
I think it's a lot different with the software business because a lot of what we're selling is potential. So we'd grown 40% from the year before. We also don't really have assets. The assets are the development spend to actually build the product. But that's not the asset in the same sense as you can just easily.
It's very intangible.
Very. So valuing it is quite different because of, and then you start to get in the world of multiples. And so we started hunting around.
How to calculate the value of this thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that gives one number, but then also the other number is what are you prepared to sell it for?
Yeah.
And be happy with whatever the outcome is. And so we sort of had both of those. The most interesting part was actually the earnout calculation. So earnouts are conditional payments in the future, depending on certain milestones being hit, and just designing that. I got a lot of advice from other people who had sold businesses, from our lawyer, and that all the consensus was keep those as simple as possible.
Yeah.
Like as fewer conditions, because then it just gets quite woolly.
When are you out? When are you finished? Have I done what I said I was going to do?
But they're also super important because part of the value of the business is the potential future value.
Yeah.
And so we were confident in the potential future value as well. And so, we took a bit of back and forth, but we eventually got there.
But it's a great success story for a company from Taranaki that you have started it. You know, when you first started it, you've grown it, you've built it to a certain level, and then you've sold it to someone else that can continue to build it. That's a beautiful life cycle that you've been in there. And how was it dealing with the counterparty? It was Thomas, wasn't it? The business that bought you in the end. What was the cultural fit like? What was the sort of values of the company versus your company? Did that match up well?
It did. And that's a really interesting question because I was chatting with someone else recently because Thomas is a relatively small business, Montana-based. So Montana is not a dissimilar environment to New Zealand.
Yep.
And the value set around that as well, compared to someone else sold recently to a NASDAQ-listed company.
Oh, right.
Very different culture. So with Thomas, there was actually a strong value alignment from the start. Also a common view of what tourism needed from a technology point of view. So at a personal level, at a vision, really good alignment.
Oh, good.
And it's a bit like a dating process. So
really?
It took time because you don't want to give away everything at the start. You're holding back. You're seeing what they're like.
I even got to meet him. See where things end up.
Yeah, and he actually had come down to New Zealand too. Was it a fishing trip or something? And so we also met up after that. That was all quite coincidental because they planned that before we'd had our dating process.
Yeah.
But it took 9 months to make it all happen.
To consummate the dating process.
Yep.
Wow.
Took a little bit longer on his side because he was also raising money from his side to also help fund it and some other things he was trying to do. And the lawyers, they're lawyers, American lawyers.
Yeah. They're a whole nother level.
Oh, yes. I
mean, you can say what you want about lawyers, but you go to a whole nother level when you get to American lawyers. But it sounds
I think their legal bill, I think, was 5 or 6 times what ours was.
Holy moly. Yeah. Well, clearly you were worth it. More. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, they liked what you were putting out. Now, it sounds like it was a pretty smooth process in the end, and you got through those negotiations, you've signed a deal, and then you went through your workout, your earn out. What was it like the day that you finished when they said, yep, we agree, you've done everything you said you're going to do, here's your final check? Did you walk out the door and jump up and down a bit or go surfing?
It's funny you say that because those deals can fall over at any point. Mm. So we were really in a way, sucking it in and holding it in until the money landed in the bank. I'm sure I celebrated in some shape or form.
I can't remember.
Actually, the partners, both myself and the teachers,
yeah,
we got together and had a little moment.
I mean, it's a key thing actually, because it wasn't just you and Letitia who set up the business. Your partners, your significant others,
exactly,
were with you that whole journey. They kept the home fires burning, raised a couple of kids while you were probably doing deals in America. So there's a lot, you know, it's a huge impact for the whole family and the community around you, actually, your employees and everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to temper the excitement that we had with they were taking on all the employees. It was an asset only sale, but they took on the employees as well. And so I was actually caring most that there was actually a smooth transfer between them, because it was a weird process, because you actually can't, or even legally, not allowed to share a lot with the rest of
the team.
The team. So we had to hold with them reason as much as we could. And then when it all sort of suddenly actually happened, we had to actually serve them termination notices for the employment agreements. So it was actually top of my mind to make sure that they felt comfortable, that they were, the transfer process was keeping a stable job for them. One of them had a kid on the way. Yeah.
Wow. But you want to make sure they were looked after.
Absolutely.
Well, good on you. Yeah. Good on you. But then you took a moment. Okay, so that was Yonder, and it's an amazing story. And you should go back and listen to the previous podcast where James tells us all about that business if you want to know more, because it is a fascinating one. But then you don't just stop there. You didn't go and just buy a boat and a batch and a barbecue, which is a classic Kiwi thing, and retire. You're a bit young for retiring. But you got into a new business. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about this new business that you're involved in?
Yes. So actually a guy I know from way back, even from school, had sort of tapped me and said, you know, we've got this really good idea and we're looking for someone who's sort of been in SaaS before. I reckon you'd be perfect for it. So I started a dating process with that sort of group.
It out a bit, don't you?
It's all dating people, yeah. And once I got to know what their idea was and the opportunity, I was like, this is what I've been looking for.
Yeah.
So market size, big problem. So it's in the market research space. So what it is, and then I'll sort of cover the rest. Ideally, it's another software product, and we are disrupting the research industry in a way. A lot of money is spent on research, billions and millions of dollars around the world. It's a big part of the marketing budget in these big consumer goods and service companies. And they're using research to help understand people, the market, what do they want, and then to help develop goods and services that people will pay for. And we just saw that it's expensive, it takes a long time to do the research, and it wasn't being used in a way to actually genuinely grow ideas and to particularly back bold ideas, because the bold ideas are actually the most successful. Because a lot of them fail when they go to market. When you look at that, a lot of them are just sort of the same, not that unique. So they just maybe missed the mark with what consumers want or will actually lean forward and take notice of and then go and buy or whatever. And so we have developed a system which makes it really affordable, overnight results to get access to hundreds of people to test ideas.
Research
and ultimately help back bold ideas and grow them and bring them into the world.
Brilliant. I mean, I have a bit to do with research, as you know, in my day job. You've talked to me about Ideally before. And it's sort of the platform that everything's built on. Like if you have good, solid research, you understand your customers, you know what they're thinking and feeling, what their pains are, then you can build anything from that. But companies don't often do the research to make sure they get it right. So it sounds like Ideally makes it easy for them.
Yes, absolutely. And we talk about the idea of creative confidence. So we want to actually aid creativity. So it's those early ideas that you've got that you might want to explore and understand. Also sometimes for internally in a team, they're like, sometimes those wild ideas can be sort of put to the side once you share it with others because they sort of see ideas differently. But once you've got that insight or that voice of the customer that can really back it, then you can really confidently bring some interesting things into the real world. And so we're trying to change the way insights is being used to make it early and often and by the marketers themselves, not having to go away to a third party and get their colour put on the voice of the customer.
Now, so what's your role in Ideally?
Founder and CEO.
Nice.
And strong part of the product development as well.
Very good. And key advocate for, by the sound of it. It sounds like you took some lessons from your first business, from Yonder, and you brought them into there. You know, you just rattled off a couple, market size, the opportunity, you know, understanding the scale. Do you want to just dive in a little bit more? What were the things you learned in Yonder that you really have transferred into Ideally?
So some of the things I won't transfer into Ideally.
Yeah.
So for instance, we tried at Yonder for a little bit product-led sales, like self-service sales. And that a lot of investments required to really make that work. The whole funnel, the product has to be awesome, the whole marketing funnel, the education. And I think that's for a B2B product, that's not, and also at our price point, I knew that wasn't a space to play. So that was good. What else worked? What we didn't do in Yonder, but we have done in Ideally really well, is actually build a strong brand from the start. We spent a lot of time actually really understanding the market. Because research, like, it's quite a general term. And so we had to sort of find our voice that was quite unique that also helped describe the type of research or where in the ecosystem of the research we play in. So we spent a lot of time building that and just crafting a really strong identity. And we've sort of started out sort of acting bigger than we really are.
Good.
And so quite early on, we got some really flagship customers, some really big names in the New Zealand and Australian world. So names such as like 2Degrees and Spark and Goodman Fielder from day one. And we actually held some events, industry events, with some really big names as well. And just with the sort of almost glamour of this quite polished brand, it really created strong traction from the start. And then we also had the proposition for a really solid investment to bring venture capital in. And it's just been in really early. So what we started up in first customers using the platform was May 2023, and we got investment in September 2023.
Nice.
So we sort of bootstrapped and wireframe stuff with just the people we had internally, and then the fuel was put on with
the investors coming in.
Investors, yeah. And then that grew sales team, because really early on we had a product that worked, so we had really early product market fit. And it's just a world, it's a different world compared to bootstrapping.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you can fuel it a lot faster.
A lot faster. Even the type of people you can hire. Really high quality people, even an office and having office first culture compared to the bootstrapped, we've gone the really remote work way, because operating in a city is more expensive.
Yeah.
But with our world, where our customers are, it needed to be the city.
Yeah.
So city being Auckland, Sydney, Melbourne.
Yeah.
So we've got offices in those countries.
Around. So I heard that you travel a lot because you live here, your family's here, but you travel back and forth.
Yes.
Australia, Auckland. Regularly.
That's right. And I've got a belief in the office first culture and the creativity, the spark you can get, the creation of the culture as well. So yeah, I invest in that. Got a very supportive wife.
Yeah.
Also helps I do have a house in Auckland, so I can stay up there when I'm there.
That's good. A lot of air points too.
There was a lot of travel last year.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And there will be more this year because we will be opening an office in New York.
Oh, wow. Soon, that's convenient from New Plymouth. It's only just one small word away. But your role, you know, growing a business like Ideally versus growing Yonder, you say bootstrapping, and some of these phrases might not be familiar to people. So bootstrapping is when you basically use the revenue that you make to try and grow the business versus what you're doing is getting investment. So people come in and go, here's a bunch of money, here's $1 million or whatever, just hire and build and you can go a lot faster.
Yes.
How do you see, you know, those differences? What does it mean on a day-to-day basis for you?
So first of all, I'm glad I've done both, and I'm glad I've done the bootstrap version first, because I think you develop a real appreciation for cash, you bias for action for cash, how to be scrappy and not just throw money and hope it solves problems, experimental, because we've tried, both my co-founders have also been in those backgrounds before, so we've tried to bring that attitude and culture into Ideally. So even though we've got a bank account with money in it, our approach to using the money and our approach to bias for action towards cash.
Yeah. Good on you. So you're not just going and buying foosball tables and taking the whole team to Fiji and all that sort of stuff that you sometimes hear invested companies doing. Nice.
Still valuing people and connection and all those things.
Oh, no, but there are different the nerve. You do have a foosball table, don't you? And that was a mistake.
Different ways of doing it. Well, we're actually planning a milestone party at the moment.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Good, good. In New York.
Oh, that's a great idea. I will put that to the committee.
Now, generative AI, let's just switch, because one of the things that sounds like the business model or the platform for Ideally is probably enhanced by using artificial intelligence and all the new amazing tools that are out there now. How have you woven that into your product set and the way you think about the business?
Yes. So the reason AI made our business possible is we go out and get feedback or test ideas from hundreds and hundreds of people at one time, overnight. And a researcher would typically print out all of those text responses and get a highlighter out and highlight common themes with each color is different theme and so on and so on and so on. AI now does all of that. And so we're really genuinely able to synthesize feedback from hundreds of people simply. But we're going further than that. We're even training the AI to think like a researcher. Mm. So our research team are baking their sort of thinking models in, like the way of mining through the data to find like real insight, to try and get further to not just presenting data back to a person using it, but to actually find insights that match their objective with solid marketing science and research sort of thinking behind it.
Yeah.
So that's all made possible by generative AI, large language models.
And I suppose it speeds up the development process for the tools itself, and you've just got access to so much more intellectual property and heft behind what you're
doing. Yes, that is also that's on our roadmap this year. And cost. So we're providing a service that's a tenth of the cost of going to a research agency to get very similar results. We're using the same survey panel that research agencies use, the same like QA process. It's just by streamlining
that bit of it.
That bit of it, yeah. With some frameworks and a bit of AI to make sense of it.
What do you think about synthetic AI for research in terms of like creating panels of AIs instead of going to actual humans and asking them? What's your opinion on that?
It's going to play a role, but we just have to be careful about what we expect from it. Because you can, of course, ask it stuff and it will give results back. My CTO often uses the example of ice cream flavors. Yeah. If you ask generative AI, and by the way, synthetic, one way of doing it is you actually create personas. You create these, tell AI, act like David Downes, who loves boring oat milk and
Allbirds shoes. And lives in Auckland. Devastatingly handsome late 40s guy.
Exactly. And so you tell it to act like this person and then ask it questions and it'll predict a response. And so you do that like a lot of times to be able to create like a proper sample. And then you aggregate those results. So that's one way of using synthetic AI. And it will get the answer of ice creams pretty correct. Chocolate is a favorite and vanilla and that sort of stuff. But if you really want to dive down into a niche, then you're really stretching the boundaries of the knowledge base that you're relying on behind the large language model. And so that's where it's got some limitations.
Right.
Can also fill in some gaps. I heard someone use it to try and understand Indian or remote Indian communities because it's just so hard to go out to that place and get insights. Yeah. So there's a role for it.
There's a role for it.
Just have to be educated in what you expect back from it.
Very good. Now, you've raised not just once, but you've raised again. Have you done a sort of a seed round and a pre-Series A sort of thing? Or how do you think are on your journey?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Mm. So things were going really well. And so we just wanted a bit more capital to fuel up the team, yep, to chase the opportunities that we're seeing and position ourselves for a Series A, where the ultimate goal is to get into the US. So we're operating in New Zealand, Australia. We do surveying around other countries in the world, like the US, UK, et cetera, for companies down this side of the world. Because one of our propositions is daily, you can get overnight results. So it's quite an effort to actually create that same momentum in the US. So it has to be quite purposeful and intentional. So we're trying to get really good coverage in New Zealand, Australia, and actually Singapore now. And with this current money, just establish ourselves, improve product market fit in the US, because it's such an expensive country to operate in. So that's what the most recent money was used for. And then the Series A will then be to fuel the growth in the US. So that's another maybe learning from Yonder, which I'm taking into ideally, is just what it takes to operate in a sales team and marketing.
Yeah.
In the US, it's just that much more expensive, not just exchange rates. It's just also the cost of doing sale in the US, and also the vast geography of it. Just have to be very intentional and make sure the economics work for it.
So the next topic I want to talk about is kind of the business case behind Ideally, like the value you offer the companies that you work with is for them to deeply understand customers so that they can then do something with it. Again, I don't know if the bigger corporates tend to know the stuff that they need to understand their customers deeply, but can you talk a bit about the companies that work with Ideally and what value they get from working with you?
Yeah. So one of them might be like a large wine company. While alcohol's in decline, they're trying to figure out new ways to reach people. Like, so different types of drinks, different types of moments and occasions where people might consume these things. And so they're testing wild stuff. And it's because it's pretty expensive to build something, manufacture it, put into market, and then work out that it doesn't work. And some scary numbers like 50% of products on the supermarket shelf are not there after a year. So there's already a pretty high failure rate. So it's easier to fail fast in the research phase, by building concepts for these things. So there might be images and descriptions. And so you can put those in front of people quite early and get the signals back of what works, what doesn't. And then you can use that information to really develop and iterate the idea. And so that's what we're enabling. And that iteration, and also the, because it's cheap and fast, you can go wider and test kind of wilder stuff. And it's often the wild things that you... James Herman, who's sort of a marketing, well-known marketing person in New Zealand, sort of talks about the concept of pushing things to find no's. Like, don't just be too safe of going like one step away from something that exists today. Like, really push to find the boundary and to find those no's, and then pull it back a bit from that. And so we enable, it's like night and day almost of enabling that for the marketers themselves, and then to actually understand the why. So not just do you like it or not, but like, why do you not like it? Like, what is it about this? And when would you use it? And you can just start to build that internal picture from this customer insights to develop the idea. And then next step is you've got this great idea. You've got to convince your organization to invest in this idea. And so that is the confidence piece and proving there's a market there. Where is the market? And to help develop a whole business case around it.
So I guess the obvious question is, did you use that approach when you built Ideally?
I'd love to, but we couldn't. We are using external survey panels that reach like a nationally representative population. And then you can sort of zoom in to who you're interested amongst that. And what that means is it lends itself to consumer goods and services.
Yeah.
So not niche, like doctors or marketers, or they're too much of a niche to use that methodology of these nationally representative survey panels.
Very good.
But... we would do face-to-face, and that's the hard legwork that you just got to do to build a good business, get in front of as many people as possible, which means you need like a good intro line. And a favorite I've always got is, I'd just love to test an idea with you. And often you might turn that into a sales conversation at the end. Nice. Of like, well, do you want to buy it then? But people love testing ideas. And I find in New Zealand with our networks, it's so easy to get in front of people. We always know someone, or you can find some connection to...
yeah.
Just talk to you.
Does that experience of growing in New Zealand and having those close networks, has that helped you grow into Australia and now into the States?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Now, the problems, well, the environment is different in the US in particular, where we're finding that already, more competitive markets. So you still can't blindly go, we did it in New Zealand, we can do it in the US. So we're actually treating it like almost a whole new product market entry to make sure we don't make assumptions that cost us dearly later. So you still have to listen.
Very good.
And so my first business failed very fast. It's because we ask, do you like this? And we get people that go, yeah, that's awesome. Keep doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Because people want to be supportive of you.
Kiwi if they like something, because they always say, we're so terrible at giving bad news. We want to be nice. We want you to like us.
Yes.
So you start building things.
You have to almost try and find no's, or just make sure you know who you're talking to and ask the right questions to actually check whether it's something that they want or need versus something that they just like. And also one way of doing that is actually building like prototypes, images. We literally sold, sold and got our first customers off images.
Just like a picture that you drew.
Picture that we drew on a thing that looks like the real product and smells like the real product. And what you're actually doing then is you're testing the value and whether you're solving their problem. How it works is like the next question, but you need to answer the first part before I talk about earning the right to then go the next step.
Fantastic. Now let's talk a bit about the advice you have, because you're a serial entrepreneur now. You're doing well. You've exited a business and you're growing another one. And I've read that you've got some good advice that you've put out there a few times before. I'm keen to build out a little bit about this for our listeners, the people who are themselves inspired by what you're doing and how you're powering up the business. How do you, first of all, cope with the balance part of it, the sustainable balance, both personally but also growing a business versus getting ahead of yourself and overcommitting? And, you know, have you got some thoughts on that?
Yes. So I've been through a journey where I sort of came from a background of I'll just work hard and get through this. But I burnt out doing that.
Yeah.
And that's when you're an individual contributor and you've got a team and you're trying to satisfy the whole team. Actually, I saw a LinkedIn post from someone else in New Zealand just recently who was describing doing 80-hour weeks and burning himself out in the process. And sure, you probably need to go through that on very occasion, but that can't be sustainable. So how do you avoid that? probably by knowing it's a place you don't want to get into, and then making sure there's focus. Focus is everything. Focus on what you do, focus on what the team does. Like, that all needs to be tightly connected, and then being able to say no to things.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting thing we're talking about in our leadership team at the moment around creating space for ideas, so you can still be thinking about lots of possibility without disrupting the focus on the shorter, medium term.
Yeah.
So I'm still trying to find that
balance.
Now, with my sort of living in New Plymouth and working in Auckland, my personal balance is I try to be as present as possible with the family here, and then work my butt off when I'm in Auckland. And I go for a walk along the beach every morning when I'm there. So I make sure I just get a mindful time without devices, because it's just quite intense and on for the rest, which I love, but I need to balance it.
Yeah, that's really good. That's good advice. And if you hold yourself to that and have people in your life that can just give you that little reminder every now and then that, hey, maybe take some time out, get some exercise.
Yes. And I'm going to build on this further, because I'm quite passionate about just what it takes to get that balance, having seen through it myself. You need to be of a financial position that you can therefore handle the stresses of work. So I wouldn't get into it if you've got ropey finances in the first place.
Yeah.
You've got strong relationships, particularly with your wife, because you're going to need to lean on them. And even when you're not there, they're actually doing things for you at home and sort of helping take care of things, even helping you. And your body, you have good health, because it does take a toll on your body.
Yeah.
So those are three key things.
Good on you.
And that was a wisdom shared by another founder, which I believe in.
Look after yourself. I mean, it's such a key thing.
And relationships. It is tempting to be quite removed because you're so focused, but you actually still need you're a champion behind the scenes for your emotional state.
I think the other thing is, at the risk of inserting a new bit of advice, but I've seen this with founders too, and you sound like you're doing a really good job, is don't miss the great bits of your life. You know, you've got young children and you've got a beautiful place to live and you can go and walk on a beach. And yes, it's exciting and fun to grow a business, but actually don't miss out on those cool things that you might not have in 20 years' time. You might not have the same opportunities.
Yeah, very true.
How do you, I've heard this saying also that you've said that you can't afford to wait for perfection. You know, do you want to expand a little bit about that?
Yes, it's tempting. Probably everyone sees it too. When you're putting something out in front of people that you want it to be good, but actually can't wait for good, what you're actually looking for is just signals that it's good enough to then help actually how to make it even more awesome.
Yeah,
I was helping another founder recently with something else, and it's so easy to go, it should do that, and it should do that, and should do that. And actually, here's a nice example. The iPhone, the first version of the iPhone didn't come out with the copy-paste functionality.
Right.
It was still a polished product, but the point is you need to figure out what's the minimum to get the feedback that you're looking for before investing your hard-earned cash even further.
Right. So if you wait for it to be perfect, A, the customer's moved on, B, your competitors might have overtaken you, you've just wasted a lot of time and money. Because no product really survives the first contact with the customer, so the customer will give you the feedback.
Ideally, as a proof of point, the first version was ugly. Oh, geez, it was ugly. But it worked. And those first customers used it and loved it because it worked. And then we actually completely rebuilt. There's no code left from the first version of Ideally. And that was just a year ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
You didn't tell them that I'm giving you some ugly stuff, did you? You just said, it'll work.
It was because we hadn't put it in front of like a designer and gone through all that sort of process. We're like, this button needs to be there, so we'll put the button there.
The ugly, great button, let's put the button there. Nice.
Yeah.
But it looks good now, doesn't it?
Beautiful.
I mean,
beautiful.
Beautiful. Everyone should get some Ideally, shouldn't they?
Yes. Makes your ideas great.
Nice. Now, we're going to finish up shortly, but I'm curious about, because you sound like you've got a lot of wisdom. It's cool. And I love it that you're still living here and you're of the region, of Taranaki. As I mentioned earlier, you've kind of that full life cycle through. But you've got good advice for other people, but you've probably had good advice and bad advice for that matter. Mm-hmm. What's the worst advice you've ever had in business?
Nothing springs to mind.
Good.
Which is odd. Probably because I might just use a smell check. Like, does that feel right? If anything, you get so much conflicting advice, and you have to sort of navigate through that.
So you have to trust your intuition. So you get lots of people, I'm sure, there's a lot of armchair bloody quarterbacks who are saying, you should do this, and how hard can it be? And money just comes in all the time, and do this, do that, do that. So when you get conflicting advice, how do you work through that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And maybe just building on the bad advice. Bad advice, I think, is when you take advice maybe designed for something else and you use it to your situation, right, which it's not relevant for. And one thing that comes to mind is when you think about price points, like a $10 a month product versus a $100 a month product, $1,000, et cetera. Actually, each of those have kind of got different business models that make all the economics and the things work. So, for example, a $10 a month product, you can't be having people doing face-to-face onboardings in their office. Like, yeah, that just doesn't make sense. And so I think you just have to really understand the environment that you're in so that you can understand where that advice might be coming from and whether or not it's applicable to you, which is just heightened awareness of your situation.
Good. And then conversely, my final question for you, what's the best advice you've ever been given?
For my own personal journey is around actually just getting into it and doing it, which might even relate to that perfection question you asked earlier, because I sort of see a lot of possibilities and just had to dive in and just start doing it and getting comfortable. So actually that maybe leads to a nice phrase I might leave you with, which is getting comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Very nice.
Which is sort of what this is all about. And once I sort of accepted that, then the feelings I had, I sort of could embrace and then set aside and then just keep moving forward.
Fantastic. James, thank you for showing us how you power up a business from Taranaki.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, and a special thanks to Venture Taranaki for making this Power Up podcast possible. If you enjoyed this episode, there are plenty more like it. Check out the Power Up podcast home on whatever platform you're listening to. They're a great way for budding entrepreneurs to learn from the lessons of others. Speaking of people trying to build businesses, Venture Taranaki is a great place to go for free startup clinics, advisory support, business mentoring, masterclasses, investment support, and networking opportunities. If you want help bringing your idea to life, talk to Venture Taranaki today. And one more thing, if you've got this far and you've enjoyed the episode, please rate it, review it, or subscribe for more. It helps others find us.